Finish up chapter 5 today. I know we are because we only have a few verses left. Actually, we've read through this. Genesis 5, the last part of it is the list of Adam's descendants as it works on down through to Noah, and this genealogy works down through actually to Abraham and then to Joseph and eventually to Christ. So this is the line of Christ from Adam. And we looked at a lot of differences that we saw in this list last week. Some things that we see here. A couple more to finish up, then we'll get into chapter 6. One thing I wanted to explain, maybe I wasn't clear last week. I mentioned something about there's some similarities between the list of the line of Cain and the line of Seth. And those similarities are only in the fact that there's names that are familiar to both. The names are Enoch and Lamech. And some people try to say, well, you can't go by this list of individuals or it's corrupt because those names are on both lists and therefore disqualifies this list as being trustworthy. Well, as I explained last week, so what? I've got different people in my family that have my name. You know, you might have family members that have the same names, and just because one is the line of Cain and one is happens to be in the line of Christ doesn't mean that they can't have the same name, right? It doesn't mean that they didn't communicate with their far distant cousins or say, hey, that name Enoch, I like that name. I'm going to name my kid that, right? So just because those names are similar, I just wanted to clarify that. There was a little confusion last week. So anyhow, as we continue to look at this, we got down to Enoch. Enoch's relationship with God was that Enoch walked with God and God took Enoch. And we talked about that relationship that Enoch had with God. Went to heaven without dying. And that same word, and God took him, is the same word that's used about Elijah in 2 Kings. Remember what happened to Elijah? The same thing. God took him. The next name we come across, verse 25, is Methuselah. What do we see about Methuselah? Other than the fact that he died like everybody else, 969 years. The longest living human being ever. That's Methuselah's claim to fame. Well, not all of it, but being in the line of Christ as well. Some interesting things that we see here. Methuselah's name means, guess what? Do you know what it means? Anybody? I know Doug does because he was the one that... The old guy, yeah. The old guy, Methuselah. You know what his name means? Yes, when he dies, judgment. That's interesting. Look at your, if you still have those charts, I hope you brought it with you, that chart that's got the names on it, and we might mention this later, but see this one in particular that's got the steps and the names and the dates and the years and all that. You notice the line there says flood. And we're going to talk about the flood a little later, but that line ends up on the same year that Methuselah died. Methuselah lived all those years right up to the year that the flood came. And we're going to talk about the actual timing there, but Noah's father Lamech died 5 years before the flood, according to the information we have here. Interesting though, Methuselah was the only patriarch that lived up until the flood, those 969 years. So what that means is that not only could Noah talk to some of these other individuals on up the line, but Methuselah as well, all the way up until the flood came. Do you think that Noah talked to Methuselah? I do. I mean, after all, in the godly line of Christ and all these patriarchs that believed in God and trusted him and followed him. I think he talked to Noah. I think Noah talked to several of these others. Anyhow, let's keep going. We come down to verse 28, and Lamech lived 182 years and begat a son, and he called his name Noah. And we have a statement here which is different than everybody else's, because it basically just says who the son was, when they were born, how many years he lived, and he died. Interesting here, Lamech's statement, this same shall, in other words, he's talking about Noah, this same shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed. That's an interesting statement by Lamech, isn't it? Actually, it's somewhat of a prophecy by Lamech concerning Noah. This same shall comfort us concerning our hands. This comfort means rest. We're going to get to this because Noah was the one that built the ark, you know that, and the flood came and God judged the earth. And there was, in a way, rest on the earth because, and we get into the next chapter, we'll see, verse 5, we're going to talk about that several times, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. We think that the world is evil today. We have a description here, and we think most of the thoughts of the world are evil continually, don't we, sometimes? Here's a definite statement to that end. So obviously, the world is in pretty sad shape. So there would be rest in a way, or comfort in a way, because God had cursed the earth because of man's sin and God dealing with that. Pastor.
Well, in a way, that's very comforting, all the filth that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because our Lord said, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man.
Yeah. Yep. So you could see those individuals who believed in God, just like we see in the world, we look at the world today and say, man, it's going downhill. Things are bad. Things are getting worse. What do you think Noah or Methuselah or Lamech or all these individuals who believed in God, trusted him, and followed him were thinking about the conditions of the world in their day? Man, things are terrible. So in a way, it is a prophecy of something to come, because when Noah was born, Lamech spoke this about his son. Okay. what else we find in the last few verses here? We talked about this a little bit. Noah was how old before his three sons were born? 500 years old. So as we talked about how long individuals at this point of time prior to the flood lived, an average of 912 years, and then had children up to and maybe past. Here's one example. The other ones are less than this, but Noah, 500 years old, and he still has three sons after that. So we see how, you know, some people say, well, how could there be that many people on the earth? Bingo, there's why. There's your answer, because they can have kids, which is kind of mind-boggling, because you look at Noah, and so those three sons that were born after, and I don't know, maybe he had other kids after that too. It's quite possible he lived another, 300 years after the flood, 300 some years after the flood, so he could have had more children after that, I guess, if the Lord allowed. So my oldest brother is 475 years older than I am. Isn't that kind of weird to think of that? It is, but quite possible, right? It doesn't mean that Noah didn't have kids until he was 500 years old or even 100 years old. I mean, nothing says that they couldn't have had children at, you know, same age that we do, 20s, 30s, 40s, on up till you're 500 years old. Probably tired of having kids by then, but anyhow, nonetheless, it's interesting here as well. Did you know that Shem, it says Noah was 500 years old and begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Who's the oldest here? Well, the first one mentioned, right? Nope. Normally, that's how it works. Actually, Japheth is the oldest. If you turn to, you don't have to, but if you want to write it down, Genesis 10, 21 mentions Japheth being the older son. And Ham in chapter 9, verse 24, if you want to look it up, talks about him being the younger son, which puts Seth, or Shem, sorry, I keep thinking Seth and Shem, I get those confused, puts him in the middle. Why is he listed first? Anybody?
Because he's the one that the line,
yes,
of Christ is going to run.
That's why he's mentioned first, because he's the first, or he's in the line of Christ. Shem is. So his descendants.
You hate to use the word, he was more important.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more politically correct to use the mm-hmm. because through him the line came to Christ.
Yeah. Here's something else. If I remember, I might mention it later, but as we're looking about timeline here, so if Noah had other children, and we'll get to this later, but which of his children came on the ark with him? These three, right? And their wives. Which means his other children what? Died in the flood, right? Not to mention brothers, sisters, you know, of course. We're assuming that he had other children and he didn't wait till 500 years old before he had kids, which we would have to assume by the list, everybody else had sons and daughters, that it would be more likely that he had other children. And again, it's not dogmatic, but there's quite that possibility. So it's interesting that, assuming he had other children, which is a reasonable assumption, that these three were the three that joined him in the ark. Okay.
So that in 6:9,
yep,
is the genealogy of Noah. He was a just man, perfect in his generations, walked with God.
Yeah.
And he begot three sons.
Right.
Shem, Ham.
Right.
So I don't know that we could get too dogmatic on.
Right.
He must have had a bunch of other children.
Right. Right, and that's what I said. You can't be dogmatic and say, yes, he had other children, but it would seem reasonable that he would have had more children than that at 500 years old before he had these. So these three were not triplets, as you might think. Well, maybe he had triplets. Well, it doesn't seem to be because it says one's older, one's younger. But it's interesting. Huh? Do what? Yeah. Okay. So I see what you're saying. They could have been triplets because one was born a minute before the other.
There you go.
Okay. That's a possibility as well. It's interesting to me, and again, assuming he had children, that these three were the three. Let's put it this way. For sure, those are the only relatives that he had join him on the ark. Whether he had other children, which is reasonable at least to assume, or not, these were the only three. If he had other children, it's interesting. When did Noah start building the ark? At 500 years old. So these three sons would have seen him working on that ark and probably at some point, as growing up sons do, help their father with whatever work he's doing. It's just interesting to me that these are the only three, and again, assuming he had other children, these are only three children that joined him on the ark that helped him in that 100 years that he worked on building that ark. That none of his other children, if he had them, or none of his other relatives joined him on the ark. So from Noah's perspective, it was a pretty sad day when he had to climb onto that ark and only three of his relatives joined him. Stop and think about that. Not that you would get to pick, but having relatives, and obviously a lot of them, because in some way or another, everybody's related, and have three, six, seven other individuals join you on the ark, and everybody else you know is going to perish. We think, well, that's a great day. God saved him. Yes, it was. But from Noah's perspective, stop and think about what he was thinking maybe on that day. Yes? Yes, it doesn't, which means there is a possibility that was their only children. I'm just saying it would be reasonable to assume that it's not. And again, I'm not being dogmatic because... Oh, yeah, okay. In 30 it does. I thought Noah was the only one that it said that about, but anyhow, okay. So... there we are through the genealogy or the list of, not really a genealogy, because a genealogy would list everybody that's in that family. Can you imagine what this family tree looked like? Boom! Look at all those branches all over the place. And this line would have boom, 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 you know, sons and daughters. How many is that? You know, we have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, big families, 8, 9, 10, 15, 16, 18, 20, who knows? How many children people were having. But anyhow, yes. Oh, sure, yeah, and other individuals on up the line because they lived so long that they could talk to individuals from many generations on down the line. Okay, so we get to chapter 6. Enough of this list. We get to chapter 6, and what do we see? And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them. So another verification that there were daughters born and not just boys and not just these individuals. What do we see? That the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. I'm going to read several verses, then we're going to back and talk about these. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. And the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart were only evil. His heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. When we get done reading those seven verses, what's your impression of that section of scripture? What do you get from those verses I read? Huh? A lot. What? Yeah. Pardon me? God wasn't happy. In general, in that passage, what do you get? Stan?
God's patience.
Okay. Okay. Basically, you get man was what?
Wicked.
Men were evil in those days. God repented, and we're going to get to that word too. It doesn't mean he changed his mind, but God could have been grieved seeing what man had done. And because of that, God says, I've had enough. I'm going to destroy them. And again, even that is not a reaction, but was understood from the beginning that this was going to take place. So don't forget that part. But you're right. There's a lot of things mentioned in here that we need to talk about and a lot of details that are left out. And the first one is going to be verse 2, where it says that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. And the first phrase that we're going to have to talk about is sons of God. What does that mean? And there's three different interpretations that I came across about what this means. The first one, I'm going to read right out of my Nelson Study Bible, because there's a good little paragraph here that says, the sons of God refers to the godly line of Seth, which intermarried with the daughters of men, the ungodly line of Cain. The results of those spiritually mixed marriages brought the judgment of God upon the primeval world. I'm going to stop right there. It does talk about some other things. So there are those that consider this a reference to the line of Seth, godly individuals. Really, they're talking about godly individuals who married into ungodly, in other words, a godly individual who married an ungodly woman and was kind of sucked into the evil of the world. Okay? You either, like, in that line, make a stand and you're going to live according to the world, or people even nowadays, right, fall into the world and the temptations of the world. And so that's what they're talking about, that intermarriage, Pastor.
Well, today, in the New Testament, it would be a believer marrying an unbeliever, a Christian
yes.
marrying an unsaved person.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not supposed to be.
Right. Using the term sons of God, which is actually used in the New Testament to refer to believers, those who trust in God. Although it's not used in the Old Testament that way. So there's one of the difficulties of using this interpretation.
I wanted to know if your study Bible mentions verse 4 in the same context.
No. And we'll get to that too. So there is one interpretation that the sons of God means godly individuals, or the line of Seth, because through the line of Seth came Christ, that they intermarried with the world, in other words, mixed with the world and, if you will, went over to the side of evil, which kind of goes along with verse 5. Every thoughts and imaginations of their heart were evil continually. So that could apply to those individuals. So there's one interpretation. Here's another one. This refers to fallen angels. You probably heard that before. This refers to fallen angels. Let me go through some of these things. One reason for believing this is, as I read through some of this stuff, is this is Satan's attempt to destroy the line of Christ. So if I can, and really, fallen angels are now what?
Demons.
So they're talking about demons here. So they're saying that this term sons of God refers to demons, and that these demons came down and intermarried with human women and had offspring. And one of the reasons they accept this is because of Satan. This one of the reasons for this is Satan's attempt to destroy the human race, or at least the line of Christ, by intermarrying and bringing evil upon these individuals. So that's one of their reasons. Another is because in the book of Job, when it talks about sons of God, it's definitely referring to angels. Now, in Job, it refers to what kind of angels? Obviously not demons, right? But angels that are still in heaven that God's still using to do his work. So keep that in mind as well. They say that angels... Go ahead.
I thought I read somewhere
Yeah. I haven't heard that one.
Oh, okay.
That this is when they fell, and they fell because of this. But we know that when Satan was cast out, that he took a host of the angels with him. They followed him. Another one of their reasonings is when we see angels in the Old Testament, or when we see angels in scriptures appearing to men or appearing to humans, they appeared in the form of men. So therefore, the angels could have been men. Yeah, yeah. That's one of their examples. Is they appeared as men. Something I thought about is what. Well, no. Well, what does it take to appear as a man? To have a bodily form, right? Now they didn't appear to these individuals completely naked, right? They were clothed, so. Some kind of clothing, and what would it take to appear as a man? So basically now you're saying as long as you have a human form and a head that looks human and looks male in gender, right? That would be the minimum it would take for an angel to appear as a man as they appeared to human beings here on earth, right? So at the bare minimum, that's what it would take. Right.
And
so
probably you say what would it take?
Yeah.
They probably were bearded.
Could have been. Yep.
Life was.
Right. Okay. So keep that in mind as well as we continue talk. this in my Nelson Study Bible references, and I'm going to read it now. It says while the term sons of God refers to angels in some passages talking about in the book of Job specifically. This is certainly not the case here. Why? And here's the reason why. Because, oh, I lost it again. Jesus clearly taught that angels do not marry or are given in marriage, talking about Matthew chapter 22, verse, oh, I lost it again. 30, I think it is. Yeah, 22:30. Where it talks about as we are in heaven, as saved individuals, that we will be as the angels, which are neither marry or are given in marriage. So if you...
Is this for the marriage, though, that we're talking about here?
No. Hang on a second. Okay. So the idea is if you're neither married or given in marriage, that the relationship that you will have with even my wife, if we're both in heaven, is not a marriage relationship anymore, because that's not the relationship that we have. Now, some of their reasoning is, well, you would still know the men from the women. Yes, that's probably true, because, again, we don't know what our heavenly body is going to be, do we? Or what it's going to look like. But, again, if we're going to recognize one another, which it seems to indicate that we will, what is the minimum that you need to recognize another individual? This, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a female body or a male body in heaven, even though if you're going to believe that the angels came down, that they had to be able to reproduce, which means they would have been created with reproductive organs. I'm not trying to get too graphic here, but you have to admit that. Yet in heaven, for what purpose would God have created them with reproductive organs if there is no marriage or given in marriage or reproduction in heaven? So what's the purpose of that if these angels were to come down and actually reproduce with women? So you understand the concept here and how this all works. And part of their reasoning is just because God didn't create them that way doesn't mean that they couldn't have still done it, which seems to be a far stretch. To say that just because you say they're not married or given in marriage, that doesn't mean that they're sexless or don't have, you know. But if you're going to say that, okay, they were men and women angels in heaven, why were they made men and women angels in heaven? And why were they made able to reproduce when that's not something that God created them for or to ever do? See what I'm saying? So why would he create angels that could reproduce with human women if there's no reason for them to have reproductive organs? You see the line of reasoning here?
Right,
but that we don't know that that manifestation in a physical body is any more than just having a bodily form clothed with a head. So we don't know necessarily that even those angels that appeared as men had reproductive organs, do we? Okay, so it's a stretch. It's a stretch either way, right? To go, you know, this, but. There are reasonable individuals, theologians, trusted men that fall on either side of this argument for whatever reason. I want to get to the third one before the bell rings again. And the third one is not that the sons of God were demons and came down, but actually that there was demon possession involved and that they controlled the men into evil actions, and that's the three. Now, however you want to land on this, you can land on this. But my question is, and I've asked you this question before: does it really matter? Does it really matter? Which in well, it's here. But we're not given all the specifics to determine definitely what exactly took place. So in that view, does it really matter? Is it that important of a thing that you have to live or die on the fact that these angels came down and mated with women and had giants as children? Because that's part of their interpretation as well. Andrew. Right.
However, there is portions of scriptures that we will never understand, but it's in his word.
Right.
I think we make a lot of giants too, because what I've read is that Goliath was about 9 foot tall.
Yeah.
And our basketball players today are almost 8 foot tall.
Yeah.
And so we're getting close to Goliath's size.
Right.
Basketball players.
Right.
So giant is just a big guy.
Right. And not to mention, you know, obviously, physically, there weren't the maybe limitations that there are to us today as, you know, man has aged and died along the way. So we've kind of finished up Sons of God, but we're going to talk about it a little bit more because there's more verses in here. Here's another one, and it's already been mentioned, the giants. Were the giants the children of men? Well, read through this passage again and tell me where giants specifically is connected with the children of the sons of God and these women in a statement. It's not. Yet that's part of the interpretation as well. Okay. It's right next to it, but we'll get to that next week. So there's a lot to look at here. And again, the important part is man was evil and the flood was judgment, and that's what's coming. Okay.
Sorry, John, I didn't mean to say that.
That's okay. I know you thought I was done. Okay. Lord bless you this morning. You're dismissed.
Thank you.